Hey, Dylan.
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
Dragons aren't real or... No, if you did, hypothetically, if you did find a dragon, how is that good?
What better way to promote the show than with an actual dragon? We may need to bump up the patron just a little.
Hi, everybody. Aram apparently needs a dragon cage. If you want to head over to Patreon, for $2 a month, you'll get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get those episodes and any bonus content we produced as they're edited, along with all of my handwritten DM's notes.
For $10 a month, you'll get print-ready maps of our encounters, character sheets of all my NPCs, and early access to Kill Every Monster adventures.
You can also listen to early, uncompressed, ad-free episodes and bonus content by subscribing to Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners.
You can find all the ways you can support the show at killeverymonster.com.
Oh, who's our good dragon? Yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
My name is Aram. My pronouns are he, him. I'm the writer and producer of the actual play Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name is Dylan. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome
to Kill Every Monster.
This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the troll.
The Monster Manual states that trolls are fearsome, green-skinned giants, eating anything they can catch and devour. Only acid and fire can arrest the regenerative properties of a troll's flesh.
This episode, we are joined by Gnome. Gnome has been running games in various systems for almost 2 decades and puts those skills to use in real life, where he works at a children's bookstore putting on events for kids and trying to indoctrinate them into tabletop gaming. He can be found on Twitter at Gnome Da Barbarian, where he talks about gaming, weird animals, and ADHD. Welcome to the show, Gnome.
I am very excited to be here. I think y'all will be aware that as soon as you posted episode 1, I jumped on that in the comments and said, dibs on trolls! Dibs on trolls!
Yep.
You were quite excited.
In like a bullet, like right there.
There are 2 episodes that really excite me. There are the episodes like the Nothic, where I was like, just this was one of the monsters I wanted to talk about. Like, I love Nothics. The doppelganger was really cool. The troll is one of the monsters where I'm like, I need someone to sell me on this.
I don't see how. I just don't get that. I mean, the troll is so, it is part of every cartoon I watch. It's part of every childhood story.
And I will justify that statement later. I'll explain myself, but like, more important than what I think, Gnome, what is a troll to you?
A troll for me is the perfect always-in-context monster. Because of its ubiquity, you know, you talk about it being in every show, every story. You know, it's 3 billy goats gruff, and it's also the troll dolls. Like, it's everywhere in between those two, which means that with almost any kind of story you're telling, you can just drop a troll in, no problem, easy peasy. More than that, a troll is a monster, if we're just talking mechanically in 5e, that has a really wide range of levels it's a threat at, that you can drop a troll on a level 2 party and just entirely wreck their day. And you can drop a variant troll on up to like level 6, 7, 8, 9, where it's still nothing to sneeze at. These things can come out of nowhere, ambush, they can be a threat to a wide range of players, and importantly, they're also sentient. Which means that they're one of the monsters that, if you follow that 3 billy goats gruff style story, you don't necessarily have to beat them, or the way that you beat them doesn't necessarily have to be combat. And that puts them, for me, in the same ballpark as things like illithids, mind flayers, or kobolds, goblins, where it doesn't have to be necessarily a combat encounter. And almost a combat encounter is almost the failure state of interacting with a troll.
Yeah, absolutely.
One troll is a threat Two trolls are not twice the threat. Two trolls are much more than twice the threat because you have to now stop two types of regeneration, and it's very hard to split that damage.
It's a lot like how casters have that logarithmic progression of difficulty.
Yeah.
Yep. Where two level one casters and a level two caster are not the same thing at all.
This is sort of where my problem with trolls sit in, is exactly that cool thing. I like trolls in that if I ever need a monster, I can always throw a troll at a party. I always take a little bit of issue with a monster where the only thing I can really figure to use it in is sort of a random encounter context. I don't know how I could build an arc around a troll.
You find yourselves in the village, the dilapidated buildings dripping with the mold and mildew of the rainy autumn that still hasn't given way to winter. And at the center of the town, which is deserted and quiet, you find the message board. And scrawled across the messages that have been left by the fleeing inhabitants of the town in what appears to be a charcoal-ended log, in rough giant runes, you read,
"I need people find goat. My goat missing. Pay you shiny."
I love troll like quest giver. I love troll as like impediment, like preventing you from getting somewhere. But like I said, it's that bit of like the immediate, like, this quest involves a troll. I don't know how I would write a campaign where I'm like, this game revolves around trolls. You know, it's like the troll is a monster I throw in as a mook in addition to other giants, or in addition to like a warlord who's managed to muster trolls. And like, that is a minor gripe because they also do some really, really cool things. It's just, I want to value them more, you know?
A troll tells a very complete story.
It does.
It is a very clear reflection of who we are. It sets up tropes that we're all incredibly familiar with. It's a perfect way to onboard new people into the game, and it gives them a story they can tell in a couple sessions, maybe even one, and gives them a sense of completion that not a lot of other monsters can give a party.
I'd also like to know, Dylan, if by any chance there's some reason that you feel like Beowulf isn't a real story.
Okay.
Zing.
So this is one of those things where I have to think for a second, because I don't know Beowulf that well. I always have Grendel as effectively a hag in my head, and then son of Grendel is troll.
Grendel is the troll, Grendel's mother is the hag, but that's exactly the duology that's described in the Monster Manual, where it says that trolls may be part of the family or small groups of hags. That right there is a story where you have, the quest giver's a human, so you go and find this hero. The troll serves at first as a force of nature, where there's this thing that keeps coming back and forth to the halls of so-and-so, and the troll is killing his dudes and stealing his mead and being a force of nature. And by that force of nature, you start to reveal the things that have happened in this place. And if you take the animated movie version that had what's her name? Angelina Jolie playing Grendel's mother. You can even tell the larger story of there's this kind of generational lie that's happening that is producing the troll. So the troll doesn't have to be the main actor in the story an interesting story to be told around a troll. And Beowulf's kind of cheating.
This is one of those things that I've read this in prep for the episode like three times, and you always miss something until you're sitting there in the recording. But the troll freaks bit, that to me is the greatest failing of the Monster Manual, is that that's the most interesting thing I've seen in this entire stat block. And I'm like, oh, it might eat a fey creature and gain one of its traits because they're super prone to mutation.
Yeah, lop off its head and it grows another. I mean, come on. Those are fantastic ideas. And I love that they tied it into, like, they just mutate because they regenerate so fast that they're prone to spontaneous mutation. I mean, does that actually make sense, though? But it's a fantastic way to make it feel like it does.
So this is where I would do something with, like, a wizard or a hag, and you have a troll, and they're just engineering a monster. I need something that can do a bunch of heavy lifting jobs. If you get a hag and they cut the head off a dragon, and while it's still like sort of kicking, they just like slap it on the chest, like cut the troll across the chest and just jam it in there and try to get it to heal fast enough that it grafts a dragon onto itself.
Jesus.
Horrifying. Just such an uncoordinated, worthless monster. But it would be so fucking scary.
I'm imagining a drow priestess who has a troll, has two trolls rather, and keeps like chopping the arms and legs off of one to stitch them onto the other.
Trying to engineer a drider?
Effectively, yeah, a drider troll. So I'll give you, there are fun things that you can do with it that aren't necessarily statted. I will say, that aren't necessarily statted in 5th edition. Especially in Faerun, the troll variants that they went into there, the Scrag and the Blade Rager trolls and the all these various things. But just keeping to troll, though. Just keeping to troll. What you've got is this source of mechanical difficulty, but also this source of potentially narrative difficulty as well, because the troll as force of nature can represent something dangerous and difficult to deal with beyond just the fight. I like leaning into the body horror of it too, that you've got this fast regeneration. You've got effectively, what if cancer was bipedal?
Okay, so on that note of walking living cancer, do you think the troll is a monster?
Yes, because people are. Trolls, if you look into the history of them, if you look into the history of their use, you wind up at first with this kind of catch-all word for fiend. This idea of this is a thing that is powerful and dangerous out in the woods or out in the mountains, you know, outside of civilization, which is part of why they don't have that society necessarily in their lore, because we within a society are looking at the people out in the woods. Now, that gets into some of the dangerous, the same kind of dangerous tropes you have with any of the anti-Semitic sort of things that wander into Dungeons and Dragons. So you've got, just like with the witch, the big hooked nose and the warts and the green skin, and how those very much play into older tropes that Gygax was knowingly or unknowingly pulling in from sources that were explicitly racist.
We've never run into a problem where D&D has been racist or misogynist in any way.
And if we ever did, I'm sure WotC would be just on the ball and fixing it.
Fix it immediately.
Editor's note. Since we recorded this episode, Wizards has gone in and made some changes to their monsters, most notably in Volos, or the book that we like to call the book that makes everything worse. We harp on them for not doing enough monster ecology, but then we remember when they do monster ecology, it's usually really bad, and Wizards figured that out too and removed a bunch of descriptive paragraphs for the monsters in Volos. It ends up being only about 2.5 pages, but it does take out a bunch of problematic content. They did leave in the part about roleplaying the hag and making unwanted sexual advances, but progress is progress.
You see rock formations that look a bit like a person, and that's clearly just a troll who's been exposed to sunlight and has been frozen there in place. This is a land of rocky cliffs and massive boulders, and you see a boulder that's been thrown down a mountain and crushes one guy's house specifically. You go, oh, well, he pissed off a troll, clearly. It's part of this imagination of nature, of the world, of a people for whom the forces of nature are massive and deadly. And that you just survive there anyway. My family, and my last name, Gnome, actually, in particular, it's a Norwegian name. It's for the people who decided that Norway was too warm and full of people, so moved north.
If a giant boulder does come rolling down the hill and just takes out your house, like, you have to think that that's personal. The randomness of it requires almost a monster to be responsible.
We are actors, so we look for actors in the world.
I also like the idea of having trolls for when shit goes wrong, but it's way more discretized than what you would give to like a hag. If it's the witch in the woods, then you have a curse and you're done. That's the game. If you pissed off a troll, he throws a rock at your house and everyone's like, you pissed off that troll. Well, that's resolved now because the troll was like, man, dick, throw rock at house.
Right. At least a troll is satisfied. Like, once they get, like, they're not going to hold a grudge. They're going to take a swing at you, and they're going to nod and huff and walk away.
I don't know. I think they might hold a grudge. But I understand what you're saying. It's just that they might hold a grudge, as in it might take them a while to get back at you. I said at the beginning, you know, they're monsters, but only to the extent that people are. I read trolls as very much, they are excess. So they are ravenous hunger, ravenous thirst. You know, that's straight out of the Monster Manual too, that they're driven by those kinds of hungers. They are greed, and they are stupidity, and they are all of these things that make monsters out of people are present in certain depictions of trolls. Trolls are the monsters that are, I think, most faithfully translated to D&D. With the exception of their sunlight weakness, I think would be a really cool thing to include. I don't know why that isn't mechanically part of it, given that that's part of both the actual folklore of trolls, and also, like, in The Hobbit, you keep the trolls arguing about how to eat you until they turn to stone.
There's niche protection in the monsters as well as in the classes, and when you start hitting things like vampire that has a, you know, regeneration that gets disabled by sunlight, you start trying to, like, avoid overlap. So I can kind of see that. In 4E, I would absolutely make the case for it, because 4th edition has a lot of rules that are based on, like, motion control for enemies. So, like, you could have an encounter with a troll where it hides under the bridge, demands toll, and if you don't pay it, it comes and finds you. Like, I can't do anything about it right now, but you wait until it's dark, son of a bitch.
And they're mentioned as excellent scent trackers, too. So it follows your trail all the way through the night.
And then if you get into that fight during the day, having the ability to, like, shove it out into the sunlight, and then, like, if it's held out in sunlight for X rounds, it actually turns to stone. But if you just get it into the sunlight, then it gets some sort of, like, disadvantage. That would be really cool for a game that did a lot more with movement.
Well, also, like, if you had spellcasters on either side, right? One could do daylight, one could do darkness. It becomes like troll red light, green light. Like, they could advance, now they can't, and they just have to keep battling to keep them in place.
They're sentient, and they have their own desires, which are separate from human desires. They don't desire cities. They don't desire the company of people. They don't desire warm beds. They're of nature in a way that humans aren't. And in the folklore, they're tied to the Jotnar, the Jotuns, the giants who fought the Aesir and the Vanir, but who could also be reasoned with. You know, you have one of them steals Iduna's apples, and in exchange for Iduna's apples, they want to marry Freya. And so Thor puts a dress on and pretends to be Freya, and they go have a wedding ceremony where he has to go find the thing. And there's an eating contest, actually, in that particular one, where one of the trolls beats Loki in an eating contest because Loki isn't realizing the troll is eating the chicken's bones and all. That Loki is sucking all the meat off the bones and going as fast as the troll is. The troll's just gobbling the bone as well. That's one of the reasons why I really like the idea of trolls, is that there's this long history of stories about tricking and dealing with and interacting with trolls. As a random encounter, a troll is great. But as a... you find out that the prize cow that's gone missing has been taken as the dowry at a troll wedding. And so you've got to infiltrate a troll wedding and beat them at all of the wedding feats of strength they have in order to win the cow back, while pretending to be trolls by, like, wearing suits of poorly made bark and rocks and moss.
But it's enough to fool them.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I'm going to call this one a success. I'm sold on trolls being, like, legitimately really fun to work with. I'm on board for this, as opposed to flumps where at the end of it, I'm still like, these need a full rewrite before I'm happy. So we've covered this one a little bit in passing, but I got to ask, Gnome, how would you fix trolls in D&D 5th edition?
So for starters, I would include a sunlight sensitivity. Now, that could be something less than they turn instantly to stone. That could even be gargoyle style, where they turn to stone until the next sunset. And, you know, they're stone. They're protected. It's a defensive mechanism. But on top of that, trolls are cancer. Trolls are an appetite linked to permanently regenerating and mutating cells. And play with that. Absolutely. Go body horror. Do either of you know how anglerfish mate? For the longest time, we did not know what a male anglerfish was. We could only catch female anglerfish, and we had no idea why. And eventually, we found out that the reason why was because male anglerfish are in the running for the smallest vertebrates on Earth. That they're these tiny little inch-long, you know, barely a fish. And female anglerfish are 60 times their size. Male anglerfish will hunt down a female anglerfish by smell, and when finding her, will bite somewhere onto her body, and then slowly be absorbed into her body, until there's nothing left but the testes. They're just kind of dangling there off of the end, and they're part of the circulatory system. And at any point, she can use those to release male genetic material.
You just say sperm. We say fuck a lot, so you can get away with sperm.
Okay, sperm. Yeah, to release sperm onto the eggs that she has. And it's not even an internal process. You'd figure if you go through all that, like she could self-fertilize or something. No, it's just she's got a little goo sack stuck to her that she can squirt onto a pile of eggs. I love this for trolls because we've got this weird, constantly regenerating, melting into each other kind of body horror. So in my homebrew, in my home setting, trolls, the giant, you know, 8 to 12 to 18 foot tall, massive thing, those are female trolls, and troll dolls are male trolls.
Amazing.
The short little ones with the globby features and the bright shocks of hair on top, those are male trolls. And those will just... almost blind, almost deaf, hunting entirely by smell, will hunt through the woods to find a female troll. And when they finally do, they'll leap on her and burrow into her flesh and melt into her.
Can I make a pitch on altering the male trolls? Red caps.
Yeah.
Instead of making them the little, like, semi-blind, semi, like, the troll doll, you make them, like... just clever enough, and you make that whole murderous imp, which also pulls the trolls closer to Fae, which is where I feel like they should be anyway. But that murderous impulse is like the legend of the red cap is whenever a troll sees a sufficiently large person and is like, ah, a woman, and then guts them and tries to tear its way inside.
If you're an average person, they'll just pass you by, but if you're some hulking dude, they're 100% going for you.
And then they're left standing in a pile of viscera, baffled that they haven't been absorbed, and just like,
why romance no work?
This is stupid, and it just walks away.
Why must be bad at love?
I'll go on Reddit now.
Live under bridge and be incel.
But yeah, I love playing with the body horror aspect. So have trolls be aware that they regenerate. So have a troll before a fight bite one of their fingers off and throw it into the woods so that if they die, no, they don't. If they wind up surviving the fight, then there's another troll in the woods and they'll just, you know, have to rumble for that. They're not really planning for that level of what's going to deal with it. It's just these things have sharp things.
And even though that's not ever going to be them, like they think it's going to be them, but it's never going to be them. It's going to be some other them.
Yeah, but that's also like humans still demand teleportation, and that's the same deal.
It's troll teleportation. They can rip off their arm and throw it.
If every cell of a troll's body has soul, has troll memory.
Right.
So it's like you could do troll messengers by biting off your finger and sending it. And you just have one guy who's just occasionally searing the end of a thumb.
Are trolls smart enough to have that kind of philosophical argument amongst themselves? Like about, but if me bite finger, am me finger or am me what left from finger? Trolls are comedy until they aren't. Like, you can put a troll on a bridge where he has stolen a beer cart and, you know, run off the driver and is just drinking these kegs of beer one after another and laying there like Snorlax across the bridge. That is a comedic problem to get around until he wakes up. And until he wakes up and just pile drives your paladin into the mud because he was in a good nap, why would you do that? It's really hard to make intentionally something that is both funny and threatening. And trolls manage to do that.
My name is Aram.
Oh, fuck me.
Welcome to Murder All Generosity.
Don't threaten the audience.
We have the majority of season one recorded and are already scheduling season two. We have big plans for the future of Kill Every Monster, but we need your help to get there.
On Patreon, for $5 a month, you'll get access to ad-free episodes as they're edited, bonus content, and my DM notes. At $10 a month, you can also get print-ready maps and character sheets from each encounter for use at your gaming table. Check out all of our rewards at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
You'll also get bonus content and ad-free episodes for uninterrupted listening.
Still not convinced? Check out a free preview of our Lorekeeper notes for the Banshee encounter at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
And we'll see you next time.
Please don't.
For murder every benefactor.
Going on maybe a year and a half, a paladin came through the area. There was a bit of a problem with the local townsfolk. Really, anytime you're trying to rear goats near the habitat of a troll, you wind up at a bit of a clash. They wound up having to hire a paladin to deal with it. That paladin made a deal. Wyatt Ferris came to town, and the deal he struck with the troll was quite simple. Don't go into the fields. Don't go into the herds. They'll leave you goats. And since then, every couple of weeks, the town basically gathers up all of the offal, all of the kind of scraps from all of their cooking, and shoves them into these little woven wicker goats. They're fantastic. They're something for the kids to do just to keep them busy. Every once in a while, the troll comes through. Gnome, you want to tell me what your usual collection routine is?
Gondak wanders down from his icy mountain home every time he starts feeling hungry and resentful of the humans and their warm houses and their weak man flesh. And he trundles down to the circle of stones where there's the clearing, where the goats are always left for him. And they're very docile goats. They don't run, and they don't make him run for it. It's wonderful. And he goes and he picks them up. And by this point, there's almost certainly something there going after his goats. There'll be, you know, wolves or worse things from the deeper woods. And so he smashes some heads in. And then he drags his goats back to his house and feasts, as is his right, as Gondak, king of this village.
Aram, you've heard tell of this story, and it is a story of failure. If there's a troll nearby, and a paladin rolls through, and there is a troll still,
they have not done their job. They have absconded their duty for the easy path. Shame that.
Coming through town, you can see these people. They think they've gotten the good end of the deal, and quite frankly, they have made off with some minor benefits in that, like, many amongst the village have these fine wolf pelt cloaks. When asked, like, oh, there must be a mighty hunter in town, they just keep saying, like, no, the troll leaves them.
Right, right. The troll does kind of control their wolf problem, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but still, you cannot allow evil or disorder to gather a foothold. Otherwise, chaos will take over. The road will become overgrown. You must tidy it.
And this is, at best, a gamble. What happens when you don't feed the troll and it comes down and it's still hungry?
What if the troll tells its troll friends there's good food here at this village who will simply give it to them?
The greed and gluttony of a beast can never be trusted.
Except at sword point.
God, you're the worst. So, Aram, I want you to introduce yourself and tell me how you're going about this hunt.
My name is Zardok, the Wanderer, and I am a Goliath. He is a follower of Shadakal. He spends most of his time wandering, walking the paths, helping out caravans, helping out travelers, and just walks this path of travel and just makes sure that these paths the smalls walk. The smalls need a helping hand, a helping friendly hand to let them get along their way in this big world.
Who you calling small?
So I would say that he has just wandered into town, heard tale of this problem, and decided it needs to be fixed properly.
How do you track things? Is this just a straight brute force effort? Do you know how to hunt troll?
No, not in the least. No. I mean, I would have dealt with trolls, right? Certainly, being from the mountains, being from amongst giant kind. There would certainly be a time where I've dealt with trolls, so I'm familiar with them. But as far as, like, seeking them out, I mean, I would look for a bridge.
You wind up with a bit of a problem. There's, like, one bridge within a good day's travel of town. It's up towards the mountains, but there's basically a stream that runs under it. The water height, like, during the warmer seasons, the river actually sort of floods and there's a actual water level to it. But right now, we're getting up close to winter. And it's, if it were melted, it'd be about 3 inches deep. And because it's only 3 inches deep in winter, it is dead frozen. The bridge is about, you know, 7 or 8 inches high above this little layer of ice. And there is concretely not a troll under it. You decide, after a little bit of digging.
All right, then. I would wash the mud off my hands, perhaps cuddle next to a fire to warm them, and then head back into town, because I have to ask some questions. We'll do this the old-fashioned way.
You get into the tavern, and they look up at you, and the first thing out of their mouths is, tell me you didn't find the troll.
So interesting you bring that up. And he'd walk over and he'd slam a couple silver down on the bar for a handful of mead. Like, it's like a handful of mugs of mead, because they're never quite big enough for me.
No, give me a good, like, Norwegian name.
Magnus Haraldsson.
Pint, slide. Fourth pint he brings over and places in front of you. He gets his elbows up on the counter, takes his head in his hands, just sort of palms against his cheeks, and just like, okay, you can ask, but I would really prefer you just let this go.
Look, I understand you've had a hard time here, but you're hearty folk, and you've gotten through with your meager abilities and the small resources you have at hand in this rather dreary town. I can understand how your spirits may be crushed, but do not worry, good sir, for I am here, and I shall right this problem for you. He takes from you, he threatens this town, and do not think he will settle at these meager offerings. Trolls always hunger. Their hunger is never abated. You cannot appease them.
No, but see, here's the thing. Part of the deal was he doesn't eat until he gets home. If I put out offal as an offering, usually he's on a bit of a regular schedule. But if he's running late, the hungry wolves, the ones that would come after our livestock, come into town, they start sniffing around, and then a troll walks in and sees a wolf threatening, and he does, like, real heavy air quotes, his livestock, and he gets rid of the wolves. This is not a problem.
Good sir, you ask the wolf to come to your door.
And he places a hand, a giant hand, on his shoulder.
No, we ask the troll to come. The wolves are an accident, and the troll takes care of them.
Then you bring the devil and the wolves with him. No, good sir, no. I am here to free you of this.
And he stands up.
I am here to free all of you of this.
There's one voice, like, at the back of the tavern. Please don't.
And he just downs his fifth beer, and he slams his mug down. He tosses a few more silver.
Good folks, do not worry. I saw you had set some offerings out by the road, and now I know what they were for. Thank you for your information. I'll take care of this troll. Goodbye, good folks. Your thanks is not needed.
And the door shuts. It's like, oh no, I shouldn't have said anything. And one of the guys goes like, you ain't gonna win.
Yes, I will.
Consider all that beer and whiskey an investment in him not winning.
Yeah. But Goliath, I had four beers.
That's half a shot.
I cracked open a 40, downed and went out. I'm good. I'm just a little kind of, like, you know, extra aggro
basically.
Four beers for a Goliath is kind of like if I opened a beer and took a big whiff.
If I opened a beer near me. So how far outside town do they set up these offerings?
Just far enough that you can see the fields. They know it attracts the wolves. That's honestly part of the point. So they're getting just far enough out that they're not worried about, like, if the wolves wander in, they're going to get all the way into town.
I'm imagining a circle of standing stones kind of on a bluff outside of town. So town can see it, it can see town, but you've got some distance between them.
It's mostly placed almost as a semicircle towards the town. They can see between the gaps here and there, but for the most part, it serves as, like, if you're in there getting those goats, then, like, a wolf won't see the goats that actually exist further out.
I have a troll to deal with here, but a troll that has been offered a fair bargain, and therefore should be treated fairly. I will stride out into the middle of this clearing in front of this offering, place a hand to my chest and cast Shield of Faith so that I shine brightly under the moonlight, take out my sword, my long great sword, and place it down before me, rest upon its handle, and wait.
What time of day does Gondak usually arrive for his pickings?
Comfortably at night. I feel like they drag it out in the evening or in the afternoon and are back in town by waning sunlight. So he would make a point, not because he's afraid of the sun. No, Gondak fears nothing. But because if he comes too early, there's no goats. So he knows they're back in town by nightfall. So nightfall or a little bit later is generally when he'll show up.
And you start getting down towards the base of the hills and you can see your herd. Definitely real because they're full of meat, goats. Standing in the middle is an odd... You've heard about this. There was a troll that like came through the area. He was from some of the southern lands where they grow... They called it wheat. The humans treat it like it's meat, but it's made of grass, which is ridiculous.
Grass is what my food eats.
Man meat is weak. Man head meat very weak.
Man meat grow from dirt. Why eat meat in dirt?
He told you about this thing they make called scaredy crows. And they seem to have one of those out there guarding your flock.
You say that, but what do I smell?
When you start getting closer, you smell like there's a weird metallic tang. You and I, Gnome, would recognize it as basically like metal polish. Like there's a chemical element to it. And there's meat, but it's fresh. Your goats are always just a little bit like decayed. There's always like just a little element of rotted to them, which is great because I mean like that's flavor. This one smells fresh. Once you start getting like really up close, you start realizing like that scaredy crow is made of people.
Okay, who's this recently bathed motherfucker?
How are you approaching, I would say?
I am going to say once I realize it's people, and once right. I realize that it's too big to be any of the people from the town, because, you know, Goliath, that's more on troll scale there.
Yeah, I'm about 8 feet.
My first thought is challenger. My first thought is this person wants to be king of the valley and take that title from Gondak, which means I'm probably going to approach with a whistling noise from above as a stone hurls through the air.
Then I want two things, because trolls aren't like giants. They don't typically have the hurl a rock attack.
Right, so but they are large.
They are
and
large.
They do have
so what I'm
going to
say
strength.
Is, yeah. I want a athletics check, basically a strength check, to pull a sufficiently large rock to be weaponized.
14 plus 4, 18.
I'm going to call that a D8 rock. Aram, does an 18 sound like a D8 to you, or does that sound like a D6 rock?
A D8 sounds totally fair.
I'm imagining like a chunk of shale, like the size of Captain America's shield, just a nice big hurling rock.
Yeah. Right. The sort of thing where it's like, it's going to shatter against the armor.
But it's going to sting like a bitch.
Give me that attack roll then.
That is going to be a 26. Will that do it for you?
Definitely going to hit. 100%.
Okay. Gnome. D8 plus strength damage.
D8 plus strength is 5 plus 4, 9 damage.
Aram, I want you to make a 19 dex or a 19 strength save.
A 19 strength save. Okay, interesting. Yes. Let's see what happens. 15 plus 5 is 20.
It hits you, and when you hear it, you don't really clue in immediately. And then you start to see what it is.
Wait, I do, though, because when I was raised on the hilltops, we used to play Smashy Catch. I was raised playing Smashy Catch, so I don't see it coming, but I hear the whistle just in time to turn and spin with it.
You know. It's too close before you really realize it's a familiar noise, but it's such a weird circumstance to hear it in. Like, this is still going to catch you full in the chest.
It's too big.
You know enough to brace yourself, and you take it like a champ. It shatters. It cracks down the middle. There's like little bits of shale now scattered sort of around you. And you look up, and there is this troll standing there. Do you continue marching forward after you threw this, or is this like throw it and see how it goes?
I think Gondak threw the rock. And now he's shouting down in giant from the top of that hill.
Next one, not warning shot. Those Gondak goats. Gondak king of goats. These goats.
And Aram, you speak giant, so you get all of that.
I do. All right, so I would like, crack my shoulders. I still took a damage,
you
right?
took the 9 damage still. Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, I was going to knock you on your ass.
Right. Yeah. So I was able to just basically take it. I'd crack my shoulders, place a hand to my chest and heal those 9 points of damage and might raise my other hand in the air and in giant.
Hello there, friend. I am not here to fight. I am here to speak with you.
Gondak looks a little confused at this response to the traditional giant opening of Smashy Rock. I'm going to make a deception check here real quick. That is a 2 plus charisma, 0. So that is, this is a charisma 0 deception check.
Okay, talky meat. You talk. Gondak, listen. Just go over here briefly where other rocks are for no reason.
And Gondak starts clearly kind of levering up another rock from the shale outcropping.
Zardok chuckles and hefts this huge sword out of the soil and takes a more appropriate fighter's stance.
I do not want to have to do this, my friend, but if you wish to end your own life, I shall be the instrument that does it.
Let's see, 14 plus 4 strength, 18 to wrestle it free.
18's what you got last time. Yeah, cool. I would be an asshole if I said no this time.
And 4 plus 7 to throw it, so that's only 11 to throw.
Just kind of spin out of the way of this one, knowing it's coming.
As this one hurls through the air, you hear,
Gondak think you make interesting arguments. Gondak considering arguments.
Boom. Yeah.
I would start to close the distance between myself and Gondak.
At this point, Gondak's going to kind of drop behind the rise where he's getting the rocks. And then I would like to, given trolls' kind of reputation as ambush predators, I would like to go ahead and make a stealth check of... For a second, I didn't recognize. I'm using my Humblewood dice, and that is a 20. He's just into the snow. Like, if you've ever seen, like, the video of, like, a corgi running out into the snow and just disappearing in, he is just flat in the snow out there.
You've still got a little bit of, like, rocky outcropping you can come up against, so when you hit it with momentum, and the snow collapses in behind you, so there is absolutely no evidence of a hole.
Mm-hmm. Once I lose him, and again, I'm somewhat familiar with trolls, and I know that despite their size and bulk, they are good hiders, and once I do lose him, I'll stop. And I'll cast Moonbeam and just start sweeping through that area. Just open up my hand and this shaft of silvery light pours out from the clouds and just starts right over the snow-capped hills.
Okay, that's fucking scary. long do you wait, basically?
What would it be to try to, like, in the army belly crawl down the hill, effectively, while still... Would that be still a stealth check, you think? Because I think that's the try not to be where he thinks I am.
I think that's entirely fair. I'm going to give you disadvantage because you have to do this, like, at pace. Because that's it's a pretty big area that hits, and he's just sweeping behind you.
And stealth is a dex check, right?
It is, yeah.
All right, so plus, I think you're one, at plus to one. A plus one to a 12 is a 13, plus 19, so 20. So 13 at disadvantage.
And I'm rolling perception, right?
Yep.
All right, plus 5. Oh, 6 plus 5 is 11.
This spell is intensive. Like, it's a bigger gun that you're pulling right now. So there's a lot of focus that goes into it. And you're just making sure, like, you kind of pointedly sweep all of this ground. Moonbeam is a radiant damage, but at the same time, it's still enough that you're, like, leaving puddles in your wake and just slowly sweeping along. Meanwhile, Gondak, you are just slowly kind of burrowing.
I feel like if he could roll high enough on perception, he'd see a nose occasionally poking out like a shark fin to triangulate right. where he's going, and just like the nose going Bugs Bunny style in the snow for a bit.
Absolutely. Rather than do this in initiative, because like that's going to be slow and tedious, where do you want to wind up, Gnome?
I want to wind up. I know this hill. And I know this territory. This is my territory. So there is going to be a path that's the clearest and most obvious path up the hill. I want to be in a spot where I can leap out and grab a person who's using the sure footing. So someone who knows rocky terrain would take this path. I'm going to be right there.
Then, Aram, I think you cover the whole area. Moonbeam lasts for about a minute, yeah?
Yep, exactly.
Then we're going to say that this took you, like, 5 rounds, so about half a minute of just scouring area, and you're left kind of sitting there just like, it's not here.
Yeah.
It got away.
Yeah, I've moonbeamed everything I can moonbeam here.
Yeah.
So now I'm looking for what would be the obvious path this troll would have taken?
Because trolls are not clever creatures, so they would have gone for the most obvious path.
Correct. That's what a troll would do.
Then you look through, and there are a couple places where, like, if you were trying to be really, really sneaky, it'd run the risk of, like, knocking a little bit of gravel down, and you'd announce your presence, but if you were careful about it, you could get up over there. But there's just one path where you can definitively see, like, this is a route you could climb. That's probably the route it took.
Am I entering uneven terrain? Is that how I'm interpreting this?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is going to be something where you're like, you're having to climb a little bit.
All right.
Snow-covered scree in particular is nasty to climb, but yeah.
Yeah, but again, I am a Goliath. I am from the mountains. I am from the snow and the stone and the wind. I begin to climb.
I think that means I'm probably going to go ahead and get a swipe at him.
Yeah, that scaredy crow comes directly under you.
Man meat, not smart. Man thinking meat, even worse. And I am just going to, as soon as he goes past, I'm going to explode out in a hail of gravel and snow. And these two long arms with these massive clawed fingertips are just going to emerge from the snowbank that you're by. And I'm going to go and do the full-on multi-attack. So that's a bite and then two claw attacks. The bite is an 18 plus 7, 25.
Yep.
Claw 1 is a 12 plus 7, 19. And claw 2 is a 17 plus 7, 24.
You're looking to hit a 17, so easy.
Okay, cool. So the claws, I'll go ahead and do the bite first. 1d6 plus 4 piercing is 1, so 5 damage piercing there. And then each of the claws is 2d6 plus 4, so... 3 and 5 is 8, plus 4 is 12, and 5 and 3 is 8, plus 4 is 12.
So the bite hits me and kind of pulls me in. The claw rakes along my side, but by the time the second one comes around, I have activated my innate Goliath ability, and for a moment, my skin flashes to stone, and those claws just bounce right off.
With breath that is foul from a diet of garbage and rotting offal, claws that are likewise foul, dripping with not just the juices of my meat, but also the climbing through the rocks and the weird tears and cuts and all that green Icarus troll blood just dripping from my claws as I swipe at you.
And you hit me like a Mack truck, but I'm big and I'm stronger than most of the things you faith, and I was able to meet it. So now we're just like staring into each other's eyes. A smile cracks across my lips and I nod and I'm like,
all right, if this is what you want, creature.
Bonus action, a searing smite, and then I'm going to take two attacks. The first one, 13 plus 8 is 21.
That'll hit.
And the second one is going to be an 18 plus 8 is 26. First hit, my blade, this just giant two-handed sword, right? It just bursts into flame before it strikes you. And you take 19 points of damage plus an additional 7 points of flame damage as I bury this blade into you. And then for the second hit, you take another 13 points of damage as I pull it upwards and out and just rend across your chest.
Gotcha. Is that second one also flame damage?
No, just cool. The first one.
By the time I've pulled it out of you, the blade is already cooled.
So Gondak at this point is, he was expecting to get the drop on you. And yeah. He clearly got some hits in, but how are you looking? Are you looking like he's sizing you up now? Could he maybe take you down right now?
You would expect me to be dead after that hit. And I am like hurt. I'm definitely like, you know, I'm bleeding and you can see where your bite and your claws got beneath my skin. But like, I'm still clearly happy to fight. And that's not something you might have expected from a humanoid.
In that case.
So correct me if I'm wrong, Aram. Does Searing Smite not risk setting the target on fire?
So the attack deals an extra 1d6.
I'm going to need you to make a D6 constitution saving throw.
Constitution is plus 5 for a troll, so that's solid. So that is a 9 plus 5 is 14. Does that beat it? Or
my spell DC is a 15.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
So this troll is on fire.
Then you're going to take, at the start of this turn, a D6 fire damage.
Absolutely. Which is a good troll hunting tactic. So I'm going to go and take 5 fire damage.
And that's the thing, is you fully expect, like, the moment that blade comes out, you expect it to heal, and you look down, and you see that flames are still licking at the inside of that cut. So between that and the fact that this creature has not dropped, this is much more concerning than just the strange tall man meat masquerading as a scaredy crow.
So I can submerge myself in, probably not water, but snow. I could drop prone, cover myself with snow to put out the fire, right?
You could stop, drop, and roll, 100%. We've all been taught this.
Cool. So he's gonna think back to that class at the YGCA, the Young Giants Christian Association, that they had the annex class on fire safety for trolls, which is a much, much harder core kind of lesson than you'd expect.
Absolutely. They take it very seriously.
Very seriously. So the first thing he's going to do is he's going to throw himself down the mountainside. You've taken two swipes.
Just roll.
He is just, you know, you're on this scree path. He is going to take his action to just leap down into the snow and start rolling downhill.
I could take an attack of opportunity, but he doesn't. He hesitates and just... Because again, he's dealt with trolls, so he just sighs and he just shakes his head.
Is this even a hesitation of like, of will? Or is this like, you just attack that troll and then the troll effectively like penguin slides on a flaming gut down a mountainside? And there's a certain degree of just like, what do I fucking do with that?
I think when you're used to dealing with a troll, it's a constant combination of always being surprised and never being surprised.
Yep.
So I think I would just sigh. I would heal the remainder of my damage, right? Which puts me through most of my hands on stuff. What is it called? Lay on hands.
Lay on hands. Yeah.
With my hands on stuff.
You know how I do my hands on stuff?
Start to walk down the hill towards where the troll has rolled and been like, again, in giant.
I haven't had a fight like that in some time, troll. It was invigorating. But enough is enough. Now it is time for us to talk and settle things once and for all.
Gondak can't believe his luck that the meat keeps talking. So Gondak puts himself out from the fire, reaches down and just bites off of his wrist and just bites clear a section. And you watch as he kind of takes it and just tosses it to the side, off into the snow somewhere.
Okay, talky meat. You survived. You solved my puzzle and survived. You have earned the right to treat with King Gondak of here.
Gracious King Gondak, I do appreciate being invited into...
And he looks around.
Your fine kingdom.
Okay.
There is a problem we have here where this unfortunately did belong to someone else before you got here. It's a common mistake with kingdoms. I do understand. But I'm going to have to ask you to move along now.
Who it belonged to before Gondak? Gondak here before puny manhunts. Gondak here before trade road. And horse, delicious horse. Bad months, bad years before Gondak tastes horse.
And he would pause for a moment.
How long have you lived in these hills, Gondak?
I am, by the way, rolling for HP regeneration for most of these interactions passing.
You just do a flat 10 a round, so...
Oh, yeah. Not a D10, 10. Okay.
You should be fully healed by now, I would assume.
How long that forest been here?
Oh, and he would look over at the forest.
And he points to this kind of dense, old growth, you know, thick pines that are just poking out of a lower canopy of, you know, oak and birch and old growth forest.
The forest has always been here, my friend.
So just little more than that.
My guy is not thoughtless. He spent a lot of time in the mountains and alone in his thoughts and contemplating his, you know, his place in the universe and the place of so many different types of minds in this world. And he would have to stop and consider that for a moment. He doesn't believe the troll is lying.
Does Gondak have legal claim to the valley? Oh God, is this, I'm lawful good. What's happening?
He would just stop and consider that for a moment. And then change his tactics.
Well, good sir. That is quite a long time, and clearly you do have claim then to this entire land. I wouldn't be one to interrupt with that. However, what if I could sell that claim for a horse?
But I get goats.
Old goats, my friend. Tired goats.
No. Those are good goats. They have better taste than those old goats I used to be able to steal. Those are good goats I get.
I see. So you enjoy that then, yes?
It is fitting tribute to King of Valley.
What if I could offer you a larger tribute? Juicier tribute. Perhaps even more often of a tribute.
Gondak's going to roll a perception check, or an insight check, I guess. Insight wisdom, right? We're looking at a minus one to that. 12 plus 1, or 12 minus 1 is 11. Are you on the level with me?
I am 100% on the level. I even have a proposal.
Okay, what's the proposal?
So, as a follower of this god of roads and travel and caravans... My calling that brought me down off the mountains was that I believe we should keep these paths clear. And there are frequent things that get in the way of these paths, and a lot of those things are roadkill. It's very hard to get rid of all the roadkill on these incredibly busy roads, and it sure would be helpful if a friend would travel these roads with me and simply have his fill.
Aram, I just want to quickly point out what a big fucking asshole you're being.
Why?
You're offering him the same job, but asking him to leave the village.
I'm asking him to stop bothering the people.
And in exchange, you get a pet troll. That is what you're doing. You're trying to get a troll familiar to eat things on the road. And these poor villagers just have to deal with wolves again.
In service of God.
I'm not saying that it's not internally consistent for the character, right? Like, it makes perfect sense that you would be, but you have come to this village, told them it's unsafe to have a troll around just to eat your garbage. I have to go kill that troll. And then instead of killing the troll, gone, but what if you cleaned up my garbage?
Yes, that's exactly what I've done. Yeah. 100%.
You're a giant asshole.
I'm always the worst monster, Dylan. That's the deal. That would be the proposal he would offer.
So horse meat, more meat, more often meat?
More meat, more often. Tired horses, crushed wolves, destroyed badgers, tidy rabbits that didn't quite get out of the way in time. So many different types of meat.
And Gondak, clearly, Gondak is having a moment with this because he knows you can't trust men. You can't trust the things they say. But I've been able to trust the village men. I've been able to trust the things they say. And they do give me goats. And this man came from the village and also wants to give me something. Maybe this is Gondak's big break. And Gondak considers, and Talkie Man has to sleep sometime. And Talkie Man also made of meat.
Yes.
So if he's lying, I eat him then.
Stands to reason.
And so as far as Gondak's concerned, win-win.
One condition. I get to keep my livestock.
Your terms are fair.
And he would look back at these little pathetic stuffed things of flesh and grossness and shrug his shoulders and say,
absolutely, my friend. A fine herd it is.
And Gondak is going to reach out a hand, and he's just going to cough a huge, like, baseball-sized mucusy glob onto his hand, and then hold out this hand that even you're large, but this is a hand that could palm your head like a basketball, and just hold out this two big hand on the end of these two long arms and go,
Gondak, make deal.
Nothing more honorable.
He would spit in his own hand and slap it into yours.
And the deal is made.
Aram, you were successful in stealing the village troll.
Yes.
I want to congratulate you on that because that is, I know, in your mind, a success.
Correct.
And the deal works out well. Gondak, there is never cause to eat the scaredy crow because he speaks the truth. There are many well-aged meats left on the sides of his people roads.
Delicacies.
Horses, sometimes a goat, sometimes smaller things, badgers, rabbits. He takes you down south for a while. It takes you a while to get used to the temperatures, but then you start getting deer. Every once in a while, just weird animals, strange animals.
The first time we came up on a moose, can you imagine?
Gondak wears the moose head as a hat until it no longer has the structural integrity to be worn as a hat.
Well, the bone's going to hold up, right? So you can absolutely, like, you will have antler hats.
Eventually the antlers will fall off just because of how they're mounted, but just...
No.
Yeah. Oh.
It's one of those things where, like, as it starts to rot and, like, you start getting down to the skull, you wind up, like, cracking it off and you just cut yourself in the forehead and keep wearing it. And Gondak's head just starts growing over the skull cap of this moose until Gondak just has antlers.
Sure. Why couldn't he just add them on? Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, God, this is awful. I love it.
Maybe perhaps even your bone starts to recognize it as bone and actually begins to fuse with it. I don't see why trolls couldn't do that.
Possibly, but regardless, Zardok the Wanderer now travels with Gondak, the Road King.
Oh, I'm so happy about this.
About 2 weeks after Gondak and Zardok depart.
Oh no, oh right, the arm.
The villagers, a little bit disappointed, and then there's a banging at the door of the tavern.
Gondak, very hungry. Thought terms of agreement quite clear. Where goes?
And that's where we're gonna cut it.
Oh, this is a perfect fucking episode.
If you want to suggest creatures for future episodes or talk about the monsters we've discussed on the show, head on over to our Discord. You can find links on killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.